Welcome to 1991 Movie Rewind, a podcast where we watch and review every movie released in 1991, from the all-time greatest classics to the critically panned and everything in between. We will rediscover forgotten fan favorites and uncover hidden gems as we explore the depths of the video. Join us in our celebration of the fun, unique, and diverse films of this highly underrated year. This week, we watched Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. In Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, people from the year 2204 go back in time to 1992 and warn of a future where Godzilla destroys Japan once and for all. In order to prevent this tragedy, they devise a plan to go further back in time and transport Godzilla before he gains radioactive powers. The plan goes awry and King Ghidorah takes his place. Now they need to find a way to bring Godzilla back to stop this new threat. Screenplay by Kazuki Omori, directed by Kazuki Omori, and released in Japan on December 14th, 1991. So have you seen any Godzilla movie, I guess? I'm assuming you've not seen this one.
No, I think I've seen the original Godzilla.
I think I've seen parts of the original, too. Like
on I think that's it.
Syndicated TV. I watched the Matthew Broderick one. When that hit theaters way back in high school days for us.
I don't think I've seen that.
That's about it. I mean, I probably have seen like bits and pieces or parts in like Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes, but never intentionally like sat down to enjoy a Godzilla movie from front to back. And for this, we watched three total. We watched the other two, which are considered to be part of the Heisei era, which was 1984's Return of Godzilla, and then Godzilla vs. Biollante, which came out in 1989. And then this is the third of that era, where they basically reboot the continuity. They take the 1954 original, and then they ignore all the other previous movies and start the timeline again. So that's what we watched. Very different movies, all three of them, in terms of like subject matter and tone. This one feels a lot sillier, goofier than the other two that we watched, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even the second one,
it started to head in that direction.
Yeah, started to They started to use, like, mystical, I don't know, like, with the girl who was, like, psychic slash feel, like, having the feeling, like, I can feel Godzilla.
Yeah, Miki Segusa, yeah, who appears in this one as well.
But even with the whole, the soul of the daughter of the guy.
That's true.
In Biollante, and then when, like, I guess when Biollante dies, her soul, like, you see her face float up.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where the silliness begins.
It's weird. It's also the first of the three where he fights another monster, because in Godzilla, Return of Godzilla, it's basically just the army, the military, trying to stop him from destroying Japan. And then they bring monsters here, sort of on accident. The second one, they're trying to find a way to stop Godzilla, and they accidentally create a monster by feeding the whatever elements to a plant, and it becomes a giant creature with the soul of the professor's daughter inside.
So, yeah.
And then in this one,
I thought it was gonna be like a girlfriend for Godzilla.
I don't know if they have that at some point. I mean, eventually there is a son of Godzilla, so I don't know how that gets really fully done.
But that's what I thought they were using Biollante for.
Oh, that they're gonna, like, woo him?
Yeah, because the daughter would do it.
Yeah, well, that didn't happen.
I know that now, but...
You wanted fighting. Uh-huh. Or the audience wants the fighting. This one is much more...
Well, good for him for having a son, because I don't know.
I know in the Game Boy game that I played, that's the whole point, is you have to go around and this maze to find your son at the end of it.
Oh, okay.
Which is, it's a weird looking creature. It's a weird looking puppet thing. Anyway.
I mean, these types of movies, I don't watch because they make me sad.
Okay. Because of the helplessness of the creatures who are just like, they don't care about the society that they're wrecking because they don't really know. Is it like the King Kong syndrome where yes. you feel bad for the creature?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's not his fault
that... True, but also at the same time...
He became that way, and...
He is invading and destroying an entire civilization.
But...
And they need to stop that from happening if they want to live.
The humans did that to him. Through war.
Specific humans did that to him. The people who are currently living in Japan did not do that to him.
But he doesn't know. He thinks the human is the enemy, so I'm pro him killing all humans.
I don't know if that's fully true.
I don't watch these movies because the King Kong movies make me sad. Like, I can't watch that at all because it just makes me sad for King Kong.
Yeah, the first one's a tragedy. The Peter Jackson remake just completely ruins that whole thing.
Yeah, that one was like,
boy, did he
weird.
Mess up the entire point of that.
Like, I start thinking about, like, Jurassic Park and stuff like that. Like, I start feeling bad for the dinosaurs. Because the humans brought them there.
Yeah.
And I'm pro them going and just killing the fuck out of everyone. Because it's the humans' fault.
I think what makes it a little bit more complicated in this case is, you know, obviously... Well, maybe not as obvious to some people anymore, because it's very far removed from that. I mean, the original 1954 Godzilla was very much a commentary on, you know, the actions of what happened in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Americans, that wasn't the Japanese, but here the Japanese are suffering more consequences because of the Americans' actions and dropping the H-bomb, which created Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So they're now being punished again, right? So, like, that's the aspect that I think maybe I don't fully agree with, is, like, the Japanese didn't really have... any direct cause. Yes, they were fighting the Americans, but the Americans were the ones who dropped the bomb that actually created the creature.
Yeah.
So if he was attacking America, that would be a whole nother story, but that would be a whole different movie, too, in terms of point and purpose. And that's kind of what Return of Godzilla is starting to address. And also a little bit Biollante, and then also this one, more so. I think Return of Godzilla and this one really do tend to get into the politics of things and, you know, try to come at it from a different angle. So now we're a few decades removed from the entire situation, but there's still this tension between America and Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, in this age, it's a lot of economic stuff that we've seen in a bunch of other 1991 movies, but also you can see the political side of things. I think it happened more in Biollante, where you had the contingent of America, the USSR, and Japan sitting at the round table discussing whether or not they should use more nuclear weapons mm-hmm. to get rid of Godzilla, and Japan is like trying to say no, by no means is this going to happen on our turf again, we don't care what you say.
And then yeah, they're like, fuck you, we're going to do it anyways.
Yeah, and Russia goes behind everyone's back and does it against the government's orders. And so here...
The U.S. is the enemy in Russia.
Yeah.
According to Japan.
Which is definitely intentional and understandable in a lot of this. And in this one, you have a lot of that political tension again, but kind of... hidden behind these future people. And it doesn't really fully reveal what the enemy is until later on in the movie. And I think while this movie is sillier, I think it does a better job of conveying that type of a message, because the first two in this era get bogged down into a lot of, like, just sit down at a table and talk about shit. It's very droll at times for a monster movie, just to have people talk about, like, specific political strategy and have all these weird different conversations.
I just want to see fighting. Like, I don't want to see this political back and forth bullshit.
And here, it's a lot more, let's progress the plot, let's move from time to time, to place, and then in the meantime, we'll have a few lines of dialogue, like, in the middle of a fight to explain the motivations of what's going on. And that works a lot better. For the flow, for the enjoyment, all that kind of stuff, it doesn't derail the movie to explain the political substructure of Godzilla. But it is still convoluted because you have basically three different time periods that you're dealing with. You have 2204, where the movie starts, where there's like an underwater vessel showing the remnants of King Ghidorah,
mm-hmm.
where he has two heads. And they explain that he lost one while fighting Godzilla in the 20th century. So automatically you kind of know what's going to happen. And then you go back to 1992, which is 1 year in the future. Why? I don't know. There's really no reason for that at all. Instead of doing like a present day thing, like an exact present day thing, they decided to do it in 1992.
They're like, let's just do 1 year in the future.
Yeah.
Like how whatever the Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Right, where it's like 5 years in the future, just they can have like a blue
like
drug.
Let's do a future. I think we talked about that in that episode. Why not just go beyond that?
Yeah.
Like 5 years later.
It made no
discernible It didn't
sense.
Even look like anything was futuristic.
No.
Besides,
it just had the blue plastic drug.
Yeah.
Like that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the billboards of Die Hard, whatever, 7 or whatever. I don't even know what it was what they tried to make fun of that.
That's pretty much all that was. So yeah, 1992, and then the third time period is 1944, because what we learn in this movie is that Godzilla, well maybe it was, I don't really remember the 1954 original too much, but Godzilla was a dinosaur, a regular old dinosaur who just lived entire time.
Yeah, just leave him alone on this island.
And he's caught in this war zone during World War II.
He wakes up and he's like, what the fuck, you guys?
And he ends up saving this Japanese troop from American soldiers on the island of Lagos.
Mm-hmm.
The subtitles say Ragos.
Which is
on
wrong.
The DVD we watched, but it would be Lagos. And then after he saves them, still alive, but the H-bomb tests happen on Lagos, which turn him into Godzilla. So there's the origin story, in case it wasn't told originally. That's what they're saying here. So the future people devise this plan to go back to 1944, take Godzilla as a dinosaur before mm-hmm. the H-bomb tests happen, and then transport him back to 1992 and basically just dump him in the ocean so that he is no longer a radioactive monster. He's just now a regular old dinosaur in the middle of the water with no habitat, so that way he can't destroy Japan. Because these future people, which is basically a contingent of three being sent by who knows who, in the future, we got Wilson, we got Grinchenko, and we got Emi Kano.
I want to know, like, why didn't they just bring Godzilla all the way to their time in 2204?
Very good question. Do not know. Do not know. Doesn't make sense that they would not do
it's
that.
Like, and it made me think of, like, Star Trek 4, where they had to bring the whale
mm-hmm.
from 1980 whatever to their time period to like save,
to communicate to the alien
to communicate. Why didn't they do that in this movie? Why bring them to the 90s?
Why not? I mean, there's a lot of questions that, like, at the time I had, which get explained later, but the idea of why not just bring it to 2204 instead of 1992, no clue.
They have, if they have so much advanced technology and whatever the fuck, like, why, yeah, that was my main question.
Yeah, it would have made more sense.
They could, I mean, I don't know. They could have made like a separate. Their
actual plan would have succeeded better.
They could have made a separate living quarters for him.
Sure.
Like take, I don't know. They'll be like, make another Australia or something.
Yeah.
And he lives on that island only in the year 2204. Like, if they know okay, these Futurians or whatever the fuck. If they know this already, why not prepare him to be, like, living peacefully on Earth on, like, a separate island? Instead of, like, but yeah, we wouldn't have all this fighting, so. But, I mean, they secretly want that?
Secretly want that. Well, I mean, somewhat. They don't want Godzilla back.
No.
Godzilla coming back actually ruins their plans, so it makes less sense for them to not just dump him in 2204 instead. But, yeah, so there's this contingent of three people who appear. Okay, the special effects in this are not good early on. They're really. The practical effects are good. They're decent.
I like it, though. I like that. But
the special effects are really. Really cheesy. I don't mind it, but, you know, let's acknowledge that it is.
It's not good, but I like that, though. I mean, if you, like, I know we haven't seen, like, you know, the most recent, like, Godzilla movies, like, Godzilla right. might, but everything is all CGI'd now. I'd rather see cheesy 80s graphics.
Yeah, everything, I have a little bit less interest in, like, the Shin Godzilla type of stuff because it looks like it's going to be too, quote-unquote, good.
Yeah, I don't like that, though. I like this cheesy. I want to see that.
Yeah.
And now.
Yeah, I think they do a pretty good job of that. And they have, you know, situations where there's a lot of composite photography in there where you have giant monsters in the background and then regular sized people in the foreground where they, you know, they combine the shots from two different times and stuff like that. Them beaming down from the UFO, because there's a UFO that gets sighted all over the place, and then Mickey from the previous movie explains that Godzilla is lying in the ocean from the events of the previous movie, and he's suffering from the Biollante fight, and the UFO went to where he is. And then there's, like, helicopters that try to get close, and they explode. And so they're worried about, like, this war with this UFO thing, and then a whole bunch of people gather on the ground, and then this three hologram people project down, they beam down from the time machine thing, and it looks really bad. It looks really, really bad. And then obviously the audio, we had to watch a dub. This I think was the original DVD release that came out in 1998, which was the first time this movie hit home video in the U.S. And so it's a dub with no language options at all. All we could do is watch the English dub. So it's pretty bad audio and sound quality, even for a dubbed movie on top of that. I don't know if a re-release later fixes that, but...
So, yeah, release it with original Japanese with English subtitles.
Yeah, that might fix some of the crunchiness of the audio that we experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, technically underwhelming for the most part. But these people, Wilson Grinchenko and Emmy, basically say that in the future, 2204, there is no longer a Japan at all. That all of the attacks from Godzilla, they were never able to destroy him, and nuclear pollution just wiped out the entire country to an unlivable state. And so they're here to stop that. And they're specifically calling on our protagonist, Terasawa, Kenichiro Terasawa, who is a writer for a magazine. Did I write down the name of the magazine? Super Mystery Magazine. And he has a British accent.
Yeah.
In this dub for some reason. He writes for Super Mystery Magazine. He apparently wrote a book on Godzilla in the future. Hasn't happened yet. And so they're coming to him as an expert because he has this theory based off of the rantings of a war survivor who is yelling about how, like on a bullhorn in a museum, ranting about how there used to be a dinosaur that roamed the earth that saved them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so he writes this theory that, you know, the H-bombs created Godzilla, and they believe that that's true. And then they're also bringing along Professor Mizaki, because you need a professor. I don't know if he does anything. I really don't think he does anything. The professor?
No. I mean, right? He doesn't need to, does he? I mean, wasn't he the one where his daughter died?
No.
Okay,
different character, same actor.
Okay, I am confused.
that's the other thing about these Godzilla movies, is that they reuse actors a lot of the time.
It's a different character
played by the same people.
Okay, I thought that was the same guy, though. I know
technically,
it's the same act. Okay, I thought it was the same character. Like, they brought him back.
Yeah.
Because they had the girl that...
yeah.
can sense Godzilla back.
So yeah, brief trivia. You got Katsuhiko Sasaki playing Professor Mizaki in this one. He was in Biollante as... you know, the daughter's dad. professor
I thought he was the professor in the second movie.
And yes.
Okay, then he's a different professor?
Yes.
Okay,
he's also in Godzilla vs. Megalon and Terror of Mechagodzilla. All of those movies he plays completely different characters.
Alright.
Okay. But we have also Megumi Odaka playing Mickey, who is the same character in all six Godzilla movies that she's in.
Because she can sense...
She's the psychic
yeah.
whatever person. Because the daughter in the second one was a different character in the first one.
Yeah.
So they reuse actors all the time, and typically it's like Do or Die. It's Andy Sedaris.
Right, yeah, okay.
Where you have the same actors playing different people, and you just have to know that. That makes it very confusing to people like us who don't expect that. For instance, Terasawa played a different character in Biollante, but he's there too.
Okay, I thought that was just the same guy, though.
No, different characters.
Okay.
So anyway, but in this one, I have no idea what the professor does. He's just there along for the ride.
Okay, I thought he was just there because, you know, he's still mourning his daughter's death. And that was just it. Like, he didn't need to do anything because his daughter died.
Nope.
Okay.
So, anyway, the plan is to go to Lagos, 1944, while the war is happening, after the Japanese troops are saved by the dinosaur, they will bring him back to present day. So, what they need to do is they need to make sure that they have people with them that were not there in 1944, because there were people like, I don't think the Prime Minister was, but they talk a lot about this guy, this businessman Shindo,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the troops. They can't bring him back. And I think the Prime Minister either can't go back because he was also part of the war, or just because he's the Prime Minister and they don't want to risk his life. Although they say something about like how everyone's going to be safe because they weren't from that time, and so nothing could really harm them? And that doesn't make sense because of what happens later on to the future people in the present day. Anyway, they can't bring people who are there because they can't have people who exist. They can't exist in the same place two versions at the same time. It's not like Back to the Future.
Yeah.
They can't have the same person exist in two places in the same time. So they can't bring Shindo or some of these other people who might know more. So they bring this writer and the professor and Mickey. Mickey's really only there because of that first scene where she's like, oh, Godzilla's there in the ocean.
Yeah.
That's about all she is good for. Along the way, we get introduced to the fourth member of the crew, the M11 android. And we also get introduced to these flying creatures called Dorats, who are in this submarine ship thing.
Yeah, the UFO that the three people are in is called Mother. And M11 uses another one called Kids.
Okay, I don't remember that. So, I don't remember that being said.
Yeah. Okay.
I was probably like furiously trying to like keep track of who the hell was where and which
okay,
time
well,
we're
I was,
going to.
Okay, well, I was typing up things that I thought were funny, which was Mother and Kids.
So they're in the kids ship.
Yes. The time machine, or yeah.
So we got like M11 with the android, Emmy is there going with the people of Japan, and then they have the flying Dorats in this sub ship, the kids, which are basically like creepy rat dolls. They're like the creatures from Critters with wings.
Mm.
Kinda. Or munchies. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay,
of.
Okay, yeah.
Not critters, munchies.
I'm like, okay.
It seems like they're prepping for some sort of cartoon thing. And I know there were toys for this in Japan probably a couple years later. I don't think they... Well, actually, maybe U.S. had them too. No, it was U.S. because I saw the KB toy sticker on the thing I saw. It's like a 1994 toy release before the movie ever hit here. But I don't think they made toys of the Dorats. But they're cutesy little creatures. Don't know what purpose they mean to serve on the ship.
I thought they just brought them there because that the purpose was to drop them on the island so then the H-bomb turns them.
Yeah.
I thought they were just brought there for that purpose.
Yeah, I just don't know what purpose they told the Japanese people.
Oh, like, oh, these are our pets or some shit?
Yeah, they said that they make good pets, but that was like all that was.
And they're just like, yeah, whatever, this is the future, I guess we'll go with it.
Right. So, lo and behold, part of the secret plan is that they pick up Godzilla, but they leave the Dorats there. And the Japanese people recognize this, and they're like, hey, where are the Dorats? And the Emmy just kind of like pretends not to hear them, and then they fly off. So, they're back in the present, and this is where things get really stupid, in my opinion.
So... Okay, so then, okay, the Dorats, they turn into King Ghidorah. But, so, what was King Ghidorah doing from, like, 1950s to 1992? Was it chilling on the island?
I guess so.
Until Godzilla came?
No, like, Godzilla wasn't there yet before he started wreaking havoc in 1992.
No, I'm saying until 1992. So, like... Did they put something in King Ghidorah to be like, okay, Godzilla's there now, like, go to him? You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like, how did King Ghidorah get to Godzilla to fight him?
Or, like, why did he decide to attack Japan, like, right then and there?
Yeah.
Right, instead of, like... Because what happens is, you know, the H-bombs happen in 1950s and creates King Ghidorah instead.
Yeah, but then...
But, like, why wouldn't he attack Japan between 1950 and 1992?
Yeah, what was he doing? He was just chilling on that island for, like, 40 years?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there was some sort of tie to Godzilla where, you know, the Dorats are under control of the future people, so they already knew that the plan was to wait until 1992.
Like, did they have some controls in them where they were like, hang here for 40 years,
right.
And then, like, in 1992... You're gonna have to kill someone, another monster.
Yeah.
And we'll, like, give you a signal.
Like a sensor or something.
Yeah, like a signal. Like, okay, he's here now, and, like, go after him.
So maybe that happened and we both missed that plot point.
I don't...
That's
what,
the only thing we can think of, though.
But that's... I was like, how did King Ghidorah know that he was supposed to go after Godzilla? Like, he could have just still...
Well, he wasn't going after Godzilla, he was going after Tokyo. The whole plan wasn't to go after Godzilla, it was to destroy Japan.
To destroy, okay. But, okay. But then...
But why wait that long? So,
But, yeah, why wait that long? I'm confused about that.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, that helped answer one of the questions of, if you're going back in time to get Godzilla out of there, why not go back in time and try to stop the H-bomb shit from happening altogether? Like, that would be a good way to stop Godzilla from forming, is to stop the H-bomb from happening.
Yeah, the H-bomb, yeah.
But they don't want to do that because it's two Americans, basically.
Yeah.
Or actually, I guess you could consider Grimshiko like a Russian or something. I think that's probably part of it. Like, two nuclear powers who don't want to ruin their nuclear armaments.
And yeah, then you have Emmy, who advancements eventually ends up in war, whatever.
Yeah, and so here's where the political stuff happens. Like, what we learn is basically that their plan was to bring Ghidorah to life, so that Ghidorah would destroy everything except for Tokyo in Japan, and then they would come in and tell them how to rebuild. Because what really happens is Godzilla doesn't destroy Japan with nuclear pollution. Godzilla never really gets that far. Japan becomes a world superpower in 2204. In the future that they come from, Japan is this massive superpower that expands and becomes like the biggest and strongest.
They take over other countries.
Who's like taking over China and other, you know, large territories, and you know, they're like overreaching or whatever, and so they become like the supreme leader of the world in essence. And these people want that to stop, and so their plan is to go back, destroy everything but Tokyo, and then they themselves will tell the Japanese people how to rebuild and insert themselves and make sure that they don't get too big. So again, like, a lot of political...
It's like, I've never watched this show, but The Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either.
It sounded interesting, but I just never watched it.
But I think the implications of the story are interesting for a couple reasons. One, obviously it's the idea of the Americans kind of inserting themselves where they don't necessarily belong and interfering in Japanese business and affairs in sort of a nefarious way. But then there's also that extra hidden thing of, like, Japan becoming the superpower who's basically just dominating and taking over other countries, with the assumption of it being hostile. So they are kind of a nasty superpower themselves. Right? Like, they don't make it sound like, oh, China just agreed to hand over the keys of the kingdom to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They made it sound like Japan becomes like this big warring nation who just
colonizing,
goes power hungry and is colonizing like half the world.
Other countries, yeah.
So that's not good either.
No.
Here's the other thing that's stupid about this. They come back to 1992. They've time traveled back. Everyone there, like the Prime Minister, and is like, things are so much worse now. Godzilla's gone, but now King Ghidorah has taken his place, and he's tougher than Godzilla.
Mm-hmm. So then they gotta call Godzilla.
So now they're like, we have to find a way to make Godzilla come and fight this guy. Which indicates that everyone still somehow knows about Godzilla, even though he shouldn't have ever existed. That's the big problem with this. How does everybody know who Godzilla was?
Okay, I'm getting the first three confused. Because in the first one, they put him in the volcano. And then however many years go by where he gets out of the volcano. I forgot.
Like, yeah.
5 years?
Something like that.
And then he, like, fucks off into the sea.
Then he's, like, semi-poisoned by Biollante.
Okay, yeah.
And goes and, like,
but then he just
in
like
the ocean.
Yeah, he goes back into the ocean. He's like, all right, I'm leaving. Like, fuck you guys, I'm leaving. And
yeah. And that's basically how things stood.
Yeah.
When they took
but
them
how,
out of
how many years have gone by?
Like a few. I don't know.
Okay.
He isn't a direct threat until they make a new Godzilla,
so
which is mean because it doesn't have the same history and memory of the other one.
Yeah, they could have just, like, not done that, and Godzilla would have been like, I'm happy swimming in the ocean,
mm-hmm.
eating sharks and shit. I don't know.
I mean, he was resting He was sleeping it off.
For like several years?
I mean, he's like an immortal thing, right? That's what they say. The point is he was doing all right.
Yeah.
Good enough. But now, like, he's been replaced by this older version of himself that doesn't have the nuclear powers.
Well, not exactly, yeah.
But not yet. So they need to make Godzilla again to stop the threat of King. Yeah,
because he's just a dinosaur.
He's just a dinosaur right now. And so what they plan to do is actually try to get him near some nuclear waste... in order to turn him into that. But I guess there's like also some sort of like a nuclear sub that he's able to come across and like eats or something like that.
Yeah, and then
I don't fully remember how like he turns into.
He retains the radiation from it.
Yeah, he becomes like...
And he becomes stronger.
Yeah, he becomes the biggest and strongest version of himself that he's been so far. And also now meaner.
Yeah, he's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah. Now he's like an asshole.
Yeah. But
so they have to bring King Ghidorah back after. So like.
And so then Godzilla turns to Japan and he's like attacking a different part of Japan.
Yeah.
Sapporo, which is north of Tokyo. But then he like eventually gets to Tokyo, and that's when he kills that Shindo. I like that part.
Well, that was near the end. Like, we should talk about like the fights between Godzilla and King Ghidorah, because there are two of them, right? Because like in the first one, they create Godzilla. He comes over and he makes very quick work of King Ghidorah. He slaps off that head that we know about.
I mean, there's a lot of good fighting before he can... They're, like, going at it. Like, Godzilla's getting the shit kicked out of him.
You got the lasers from the flying monster, and then Godzilla shooting his lasers at the monster and chopping heads off.
Yeah, and so until he chops the middle head off, and then...
And then that's the end of that creature, right?
Like, Ghidorah tries to fly away, but he's got, like, holes in his wings and
shit. Yeah, because
like,
he's lasering holes into the wings.
Yeah, so he can't fly.
So that's when he becomes...
And then he drowns into the bottom of the ocean.
Where we see him in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And so now Godzilla's like
big threat again. I'm fucking mad now. I'm gonna fucking attack Japan again.
Yeah, like, you assholes, now you did create me.
So I'm gonna fuck you up.
And you made me fight this fucker.
And then, I like when he, the whole thing between him and Shindo, that staring at each other through the window.
That was so fucking weird, though.
I liked it, though.
Because there's like this knowing glance from both of them.
He's like
Godzilla
because they remember,
Shindo,
he was like, oh, I remember this guy.
But like, he saved him once, and now he's like, all right, fuck you, asshole.
Yeah!
Like, for no reason. And Shindo's like, yeah, my time to die. It's cool.
Yeah, like, the second he sees... Like, the second they just stare at each other, Shindo knows. He's like, oh, I'm fucked.
I've had a good run.
And then... Godzilla knows.
He's like, oh, this motherfucker.
Yeah.
I saved you once. You aren't doing shit for me now.
So I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
So, I like that.
So Godzilla's running rampant.
Yeah, and Emmy travels to the future again.
To take the remnants of King Ghidorah and then make a super version. So they have, because Godzilla's so mean, they need to revive King Ghidorah and create, like, a mech version of
Ghidorah.
Yeah,
but how did she,
which she is now piloting.
Yeah. How did she obtain, like, just, like, teleport it up into her ship?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
I mean, if they can transport Godzilla from one place to another time.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. They could easily create whatever. I mean, it's like Bill and Ted logic at this point, right? Like, you can just, like, create the mech suit 10 years in the future from 2204, go back to 2204, whatever, build the fucking thing, and then go back to 1992 with the suit. I don't know. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, then she creates the Mecha King Ghidorah, which, it's funny because you have Terasawa and the professor, they're just, where are they?
Because they're watching.
Yeah, they're watching, but where are they watching it from? They're like watching it like it's a movie, because they're like, yeah. Oh!
That's the weirdest like thing about these reacting movies.
To this.
All of these movies have the same type of thing where there's just people in a room who can just watch the entire thing on monitors. Like, who's filming it? Like, where are these cameras that are filming these battles?
That's what I was like, how come they're immune? Watch it
in a war room.
But they're like 100 feet away from all this fighting, and they're immune to all this, like, fucking lasers and shit.
Yeah, and scrap.
Yeah, shrapnel. Buildings are falling, and they're not even afraid. They're just, like, glued to Godzilla fighting whoever. But then, because then... When Mecha King Ghidorah comes, they call him that. They're like, it's Mecha King. Like, right. They name him that.
Yeah. I mean, it's natural. I think they do know that Emmy's inside as well, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they know that. Anyway, before that even happens, though, there's this big battle with M11.
Yeah.
Who is working for the bad guys, Wilson and Grinchenko. Emmy is not necessarily on their side. She's along with the plan for a little while, but she doesn't know the full extent of it. And when she learns that it's actually meant to sort of make Japan a submissive country again, she rebels against the whole thing. And they have to, like, there's this whole scene where M11, the android, is basically like a Terminator. I don't know if they saw T2 previews, because this did come out after.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen movies that were released in December that had T2.
Yeah, Bernard and the Genie, for
Bernard
instance.
Yeah, Bernard and the Genie.
And a couple, I think one or two others, I think, referenced it in some weird way, like, you know, like a movie poster in the background or something. But, like, was that something they just added in? Because there's some really bad effects for that, too, where he catches on fire, his face comes half off, too, so you can see the robotic stuff in between. He runs super fast in a really terrible way, and he stops the car. It's basically like a scene that's directly ripped off from T2.
Yeah.
And at some point, Emmy is able to get a hold of M11 and take his head apart to reprogram him by putting a different disc inside of his ear hole.
Yeah, to work with her.
And then now he's a good guy. Which, again, is from T2, right? Mm-hmm. Where they the special edition only, but still. That all happens, and M11 is now on their side, but I forget exactly what happens to him. Does he just help kill the bad guys?
I don't remember. So then we just have, like, the cybernetic Ghidorah. He's blasting Godzilla with beams, and Godzilla is, like, getting stronger. Like, Godzilla counters by just blasting Ghidorah with his atomic breath.
Yeah, at one point he's this might have been the older one. Yeah, this is the other one. There's that one point where he's getting choked out by the tail, and then he just, like, gives, like, one big blast. That's the one that takes the head off, and then he just, like, starts dancing afterwards.
Like, he's won the Super Bowl or some shit.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was, like, the first...
That was the first one.
Their first fight. Because, I mean, their first fight lasted longer because they were, like, they were going at it. It was, like, giving a run for Godzilla's money here because he was, like, getting kind of weak or whatever. But then when, like, the Mecha King Ghidorah comes back, it's a shorter fight. It's like all of a sudden Godzilla is, like, stronger or some shit. And
he might have found, like, another fuel source or something that we're both forgetting.
Yeah.
But all I know Ghidorah, is, like, Emmy's inside the Mecha Ghidorah.
Yeah, but carries Godzilla out. And then Godzilla breaks from, like, the restraints of Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's when Ghidorah, they both crash into the ocean.
Yeah, no, I don't know. At some point, I think Emmy is able to escape.
Yeah.
And I think M11, like, takes her home. I think that's what happens.
Okay, I think because he didn't die.
Because part of it was, like, Terasawa thought that she would stay and be with him. Because they're, like, building some sort of, like, a love interest or whatever. But she's like... No, actually, we're related. Goodbye!
Well, like, the first time... the first time before she went to create Mecha King Ghidorah or whatever, Because she's like, before she left, she tells Terasawa, I really liked it here, and it was because of you. But it didn't. She didn't say why. But, you know, and then the second time that she leaves, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a descendant of yours, goodbye. And it's yeah. like, and he's like, well, I don't know.
It's like, oh, fuck.
What the fuck? Yeah. But then...
But then, like, he's gonna be with, like, the other person who works for the Super Mystery Magazine, yeah, that, who's in, like, two scenes.
Yeah, I forgot her name.
I don't know her name at all.
In the beginning of the movie, she, like, says, hey, do you want to... Like, she basically proposes to him over the phone.
Yeah.
Like, when this is all over, do you want to marry me? Like, right. That was, like, in basically the beginning.
Yeah, and he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other thing that was kind of funny is, like, they're talking about, like, the future book that he wrote that, again, still yeah. exists after Godzilla is supposed to no longer exist.
Like, his theory worked or some shit.
And he's like, oh, so my book is really good success. He's like, and Emmy's like, actually, nobody really knows about your book. Like, nobody bought your book. We just happened upon it. So he's, like, deflated from that. Like, for the most part, I really enjoyed things, but I really... There's always trouble with time travel stuff, and the thing that really bugged me is that everybody in the world, not just the people who were involved in the spaceship stuff, but people who did not come along with, still knew who Godzilla was and acted as if that entire history had happened, even though it didn't. And that bothers me, that they couldn't figure out a better way to go about that. I think the last thing to really quickly mention is just the score of this movie, because you have the iconic Godzilla composition, and you have the original composer, Akira Ifukube, coming back for the first time since 1977 to do a Godzilla movie. So you have, you know, the theme, and it's very prevalent, and it's, you know, it's a good one. I enjoy it. But, I don't know, I think we covered pretty much everything else, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for the major Spielberg joke.
But... Yeah, but I thought that guy's name was Spielberg, and he wasn't joking and calling him Spielberg. Like,
yeah, there's a U.S. soldier. They show a scene in the 1944 days where the U.S. soldier is looking at the UFO. They both see the UFO, and someone says, "Hey, Major Spielberg, you could tell your grandkids about this."
And I thought his literal name was Spielberg. Like, the Japanese are like, what's an American name? It's Spielberg, so let's just call him Spielberg.
Yeah, no, I think it's meant to be a reference to, you know,
like, Spielberg. Take a jab.
It's more like a reference like, haha, isn't it funny? Because Spielberg's going to go on and do E.T. and Close Encounters, and here's a UFO.
Okay. I just literally thought his name was Spielberg because the Japanese are like
thinking, this sounds American.
Yeah, thinking of American names, and they're like, let's just call him Spielberg.
No, I think it's supposed to be a reference.
Okay.
But anyway, so we'll quickly talk about a little bit more of the awards and the cast and crew that we haven't already mentioned. On the award front, just a couple quick ones to mention. At the awards of the Japanese Academy, it got a special award for Koichi Kawakita and his staff for the special effects, which I don't know how many other eligible options there were in 1991 for Japan. Cast and crew, Kazuki Omori is the director and writer. He's done Hear the Song of the Wind, Succession, obviously not the HBO show, Hit the Goal, and also Godzilla vs. Biollante. He's also credited as doing archival footage for a whole bunch of other Godzilla movies because of those two movies that he's done. Kenichiro Terasawa, who was played by Kosuke Toyohara, he was in Biollante as a different character. He was also in things like Lost Oddity, Zatoichi, The Last, the High and Low series, and also Mr. Baseball. He had a small role as one of the Japanese players in that. Not a whole lot to talk about in terms of cast and crew. Most of them are basically just in, like, Godzilla movies, so... You know, just assume that a whole bunch of them are in a whole bunch of other ones. I will mention that businessman Yasuaki Shindo was played by Yoshio Tsuchiya. He was in Godzilla Raids Again, Invasion of the Astro Monster, Son of Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters, a whole bunch of other ones like that. But he's also been in things like Seven Samurai, Throne of Blood, The Hidden Fortress, and Yojimbo. So not just Toho productions like some of these actors, he was able to branch out and do some Kurosawa and things like that too. And then also we have the Prime Minister, who was played by So Yamamura, who has a Lifetime Award from the Japanese Academy. Aside from Godzilla work, he has done Gung-Ho, Shadow Warriors, Tora Tora Tora, and Early Spring. We can move on to True Crime and Pop Culture.
This movie was released on December 14th, 1991, which was a Saturday. And I have a couple of TV things. They're polar opposites of each other.
Okay.
The first thing that I saw that was on ABC was another Christmas special. It was Winnie the Pooh and Christmas 2. And I found it on archive.org, but the video I found was like the VHS version,
okay,
which was released in like 92 or 93 because it was an hour long. But on ABC, it was like a 30-minute thing. But I watched the whole Winnie the Pooh Christmas 2, which was just like the half hour. Because the first part, it had commercials. But then the second part had, it was all like Walt Disney specials. Like they were talking to animators. And then they were also talking about the Muppet Christmas movie.
Okay.
Which,
so it's almost like a special features,
yeah,
edition, the last,
yeah,
half hour.
But the, you know, the Muppet Christmas movie didn't come out until 1992.
Yeah.
So this was like all 1992 stuff that they were, and then they would talk to the animators. I kind of skipped around because I was like, all right, the Winnie the Pooh stuff is done, so I don't need to really pay attention. But they talked to the animators of Beauty and the Beast, talking about like the history of just animation from like Snow White all the way up to Beauty and the Beast, basically. But they did like a good chunk of Beauty and the Beast. And then the next chunk of that was just talking about the Muppet Christmas movie. So the Winnie the Pooh and Christmas 2, it was a Christmas TV special that was broadcasted on December 14th, 1991 on ABC, produced by Disney Animation. This special received a Primetime Emmy Award nomination for Outstanding Children's Program in 1992.
Hmm.
But the plot is just, you know, it's Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh. It's a couple days before Christmas, and Christopher Robin decides to write a wish list to Santa, and they are all just sitting around, like, Christopher Robin's asking everyone, what do you want for Christmas? And Rabbit wants a fly swatter because there's bugs that keep on going into his house, eating his carrots. Eeyore wants an umbrella to keep the snow off of his house because, you know, he lives, like, in that shack looking thing. And Tigger wants just one snowshoe to go on his tail,
okay,
so he can bounce in the snow with his tail. All
right.
And then Christopher Robin sends the what, he doesn't mail the letter, he just, like, a big gust of wind comes and the letter goes north.
Always gotta make things harder.
Right. And, but, like, the, later on, Piglet, like, Piglet is there. It didn't say what Piglet wanted. I think Piglet was like, just give me anything, I don't care.
Yeah.
And, but then later on, Piglet was like, Winnie, like, Pooh, you didn't write anything on this letter, so you're not gonna get anything for Christmas. So then, Winnie the Pooh tries to find the letter. He goes north, and he and Piglet, like, make this balloon fucking thing to, and they find the letter that's flying north,
mm-hmm,
and they bring it back, And Winnie the Pooh, like, writes, like, rewrites the letter to Santa. But everyone else, like Tigger, Rabbit, and Eeyore, they want more stuff now.
Okay.
So Tigger's like, I want 6 snowshoes now. And then, like, Rabbit is like, I want 3 flight, you know, whatever the fuck. And then Winnie the Pooh, like, writes down, you know, he just wants his pot of honey or whatever. And he sends the letter off to Santa, and it goes north, but then it ends up going, another big gust of wind takes it south.
Mm-hmm.
And Winnie the Pooh tries to salvage it, but can't. So he feels bad, so he dresses up as Santa and sends Rabbit, Tigger, and Eeyore, like, makeshift, like, homemade gifts that okay. are, like, similar to what they want. And they think Santa's giving them these presents until, you know, they all realize it's Winnie the Pooh. They confront him. And then he's all, like, sad about it. Like, oh, I was trying to give everyone a good Christmas. And then Christopher Robin comes on Christmas Day. Christopher Robin just wanted a sled. He got a sled, and he comes and brings everyone the gifts that they all originally wanted. And then he gives Pooh his pot of honey, and Pooh is like, I shouldn't even be accepting this gift because I feel like... I shouldn't
even be alive.
Like, I shouldn't even be accepting this gift because I, like, ruined Christmas, but not really. And then the moral of the story is that I just want to have my friends with me on Christmas. The end.
Moral of the story is Santa actually lives south. You just don't know it.
But yeah, that was the story. And then, like, the first couple of minutes, you know how, like, that other Christmas story we watched about that girl that was adopted?
Yeah, the McDonald's one?
That was presented by Ronald McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
This one was just, before this cartoon started, it was presented by Michael Eisner, who was the CEO of Walt Disney at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Winnie the Pooh characters, you know, like, the Disney characters, like, dressed up and, like, Christmas gear, and they're, like, decorating a palm tree because they're celebrating, you know, Christmas in California.
Mm.
But that was the intro to this movie.
Like, people in suits, not a Roger
Rabbit. Yeah. Not animated, like, actual, like, yeah. The characters you see in Disneyland or whatever. Yeah,
who walk around the parks.
Yeah. But that was it. Then something else that I saw that was on later on at night, totally different vibe, was there was an Aerosmith tribute, I don't know why, on the Headbangers Ball on MTV. But I found that on YouTube, but it's only 12 minutes long because they took all the videos out. I don't know. I know Ricky Rackman is the host, but, you know, Headbangers Ball started in 1987. And the first season, it was hosted by Kevin Seal. I don't know if you know who he is.
I don't remember Kevin Seal, no.
He was like an early on MTV VJ, but he used to do the 120 minutes.
Maybe I would recognize it if I saw him, but I don't know the name. Yeah. Is he like the more like redheadish guy?
He's like a nerdy white guy. I literally don't know how to describe him like, besides being a nerdy white guy. The second host was Adam Curry for a couple of seasons.
I know who Adam Curry is. That sounds familiar.
And then it was Ricky Rattman until, you know, Headbangers Ball was canceled in 1995. But then I guess there was a resurgence, you know, when they made like MTV2 and then MTV Classic, they like redid Headbangers Ball. But, I mean, I used to sort of watch because I thought Ricky Rackman was cool when I was younger.
Never watched it because I wasn't into that type of music. I'm looking at a picture of Kevin Seal. I do not recognize him at all. Yeah, it wasn't my thing, so I never watched it. But I mean, yeah, I have no problem with Ricky Ratman. I definitely
remember him as a DJ. I just thought he was a cool dude. Yeah. The whole stuff about Ricky Ratman is interesting. Like, because he's, like, before he was an MTV, like, VJ and host and whatever, he's, like, really good friends with, like, all the guys from Guns N' Roses. And, like, the podcast I listened to, Bandsplain, when they did the Guns N' Roses episodes, he was, like, the guest host. Because, like, you know, he has all the inside info about the history of Guns N' Roses. But, yeah, so this entire episode was just, like, a tribute to Aerosmith. It wasn't, like, anything... Like, they didn't have an album out because their next album didn't come out until 1993.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was, like, before their massive hit in the early 90s.
Right. With, like, Crazy. Crazy. I mean, that's,
and Crying.
Crying. That's
Living
when...
Living on the Edge and all that stuff.
Yeah, because that's when I started to really know who they are, was basically because of the Alicia Silverstone videos.
Like, I knew a couple of their, like, songs to a degree, but, like, Walk This Way...
Yeah, that's because they did talk about that with the Run DMC. But they talked about that at the very end of this episode. So, like, the episode started with just, like, Ricky Ratman talking about, like, how cool Aerosmith is. He saw them live and they're, like, great, but one of the best rock performances ever. And then he says that one of the coolest moments to ever happen to him was that Steven Tyler recognized him. And, like, when he was, like, backstage, Steven Tyler said, "Oh, hey, Ricky." And he was like, "Whoa," that's like, It wasn't Ricky, like, interviewing them. It was just, like, Ricky Ratman just talking about Aerosmith. And then the entire Headbangers Ball half hour was Aerosmith videos. And then he would just, like, introduce a video. And then, you know, they cut the videos out. Mm-hmm. But then he'll come back from, like, you know, the video or, like, commercial break and be like, "Here's, like, a brief snippet of how they, like, got together." And then they just show, like, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry, like, how they got together, like, in the early 70s. And they show, like, some live shows of theirs and how, like, you know, Dream On was, like, their first big hit and, like, 1972 or something like that. And then it, like, Ricky Ratman again goes, "Wasn't that cool?" or whatever the fuck. And then he's like, "Here's another video." And then it goes back, and then it comes back from, like, another commercial break, and Ricky's like, "Well, the guys had, like, hard times." So then there's, like, a 2-minute thing about how Steven Tyler was talking about his drug addiction. And then how he, at that time, he's, like, sober. But then he was like, "Yeah, it was cool, though. Like, drug sex. Like, it was cool to do drugs."
Like,
it
kind of sucked at times, but it was
he good. Was like, "I was literally dying. But, yeah, you know, drug sex and rock and roll." Huh?
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck are you trying to portray here?
He doesn't know.
But it's just like, and then, you know, and then it cuts back to Ricky again introducing another video. And then that's when they talk about more of their live shows and the hits from, like, the mid-80s. And then they talk about that collab with Walk This Way with Run DMC. And then that was it. That was the end of that episode.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a bad thing. I mean, you know, even if there's nothing that they're promoting, is, you know, here's the history of, like, a band that has...
Yeah, it was like a behind the music, but, like, a very truncated version of it. That's what was on TV that night.
So we'll move on to rankings and ratings. Where on your 1 to 5-star scale are you going to put Godzilla versus King Ghidorah?
I'm going to give this a 2.
A 2? Okay. I'm going to go a little higher than you.
Okay.
On my 0 to 4-star scale, I'm going to say it's a 3.
I just have so many questions, and I just want Godzilla to live peacefully on an island.
I mean, at the end of this one, Godzilla basically just walks into the ocean. He's like, I'm done with you fucks. And he just, like, walks into the ocean and that's it, right?
Yeah, but, so, I mean, there's,
we
like,
know he's going to come back in more films.
Yeah, there's
films,
more but, movies, so I know that some other bullshit
like, I'm
happened.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
Going. Yeah.
I know more bullshit's going to happen with him.
But I think, in terms of my feelings, I think it's, of the three that we watched, I don't think it's the best technically, but it was the most enjoyable. I think Return of Godzilla was, like, the best in terms of filmmaking.
Oh, okay. I mean, I like
and the special effects I thought were appropriately good in that one.
I like the second one, mainly because of the whole soul into Biollante.
But this one had the type of mix of goofy and serious, and like it kept the flow. It had some good action. It took a while for the monster fight to actually happen, but, you know, I wasn't disappointed. So, yeah, it could easily be better, especially on a technical standpoint, special effects standpoint, but it's a 3 out of 4 for me. Every movie is worth watching once. Would you watch it again?
I would like to see this movie at, like, a midnight showing with, like, a bunch of other people, so we
so you can get, like, the crowd riled up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I probably wouldn't watch this, like, on my own.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't watch this again anytime soon. I would say if I were to watch a Godzilla movie, there's so many more to
go
after.
I'll watch the others. I'll even watch the most recent one, the Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, that one's supposed to be
really
good,
too. So,
I mean, like, I'm interested in the series, but it's very daunting. And before I watch anything, 3 was enough for a short period of time. Like, I'm good for a little while.
Yeah, it's like watching like Grey's Anatomy. I don't even know. Like, watching 20 seasons of something, like, committing to that is just, it's too much.
The fear is that they're just too samey, right?
Yeah.
Like I don't want to watch another one and have it just be a rehash of the same thing, and I'm glad that the three that we watched weren't really that, but yeah, I would try other ones before going back to this, but I think this would be higher on the list of the ones that I would go back to if I revisit any of them. If you out there do want to watch Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah, as of this recording in March 2024, it's only available on VHS or DVD. As always, check your local listings. As for us, you can listen to us on all of your major podcasting platforms. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. You can email us at 1991movierewind@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, YouTube. Just search 1991 Movie Rewind, or go to 1991movierewind.com for the list of movies along with show notes and more. Next week, we're closing things out with The Silence of the Lambs. That's on Fubo TV, AMC+, MGM+, Digital Rental, VHS, or DVD. We will see you then.
Thanks.